Good evening, everybody. Cheer if you're an alcoholic. Bill, can you hear us sing all right? I don't want you to miss none of this now. You okay? All right. What a treat for this drunk. First of all, I want everybody on the committee to help put this thing on. Stand up, please. A lot of you in this room have been around and been involved with them. These things don't just happen. It's a lot of work. And I appreciate Don asking me, allowing me to do this in the committee. This is my 36 years involved with Allison around it. My first time behind the podium here. So it's an honor. And I can't say enough. I don't know, over the year, and I thought when Don and I decided it'd probably be the best thing for me to do this tonight, due to a gentleman being sick, and we should all say a little special prayer for Scott L. out of Nashville, Tennessee, sick man, as I understand. When you're saying that prayer, you might whisper a little silent one for me tonight, and all these other speakers for the weekend, that we might say something that helped one drunk. And this thing, all the fun that we're going to have here will be worth it. It'll be, I'll get into it in a few minutes in my story, why this roundup is so special to me and how it helped me on my very first one. And I hope that happens to somebody in this room tonight. I do have a home group, focused on solution group in Kennesaw, Georgia. We meet on Tuesday night. 7 o'clock, be over there. You're invited. I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor. My sobriety date is November 5th, 1985. And my first roundup was in 86, as I told you. when Don and I discussed this and decided I'd speak, the first thing that came to mind, to tell you the truth, was I better inform all these people all the history of the roundup and give them all the details. And I got to think about it. That may take a few minutes, you know. So what I'm going to try to do, and I did, I said the same prayer before I come in here tonight as I did one time. I was honored to speak to a group where they had 7 people. And I asked the same thing that day that I did tonight. Please take the ego out and let me bring something that might help somebody. And that's my prayer, and I'm going to try to mix in some of the roundup history that go along. I can't help it. It's just, it's in my mind. And the people I've been blessed to get to know through this roundup, and speakers and people. And let me make this suggestion before I forget it. I don't know where somebody told me I just started doing it. It started in Huntsville, Alabama. And I said, I'm going to make me one new friend each roundup I go to. And I've had a pretty good run instead. Had one Al-Anon on the treadmill one time. We were in a, you know, and didn't know her from Adam's apple. Time we got through all that treadmill, I knew her story and she knew mine. You know, so you don't know where it's going to go. And, you know, we're going to have some activities in the morning. I'm going to try to get through by 10 o'clock so we can get out of here and get up. I'll do my best. Some of these locals, if they come out and know it, I'd rather hear myself talk than anybody else. Tim T., one of my favorite speakers in Alcoholics Anonymous from Cleveland, Ohio, had the best disclaimer, you see. That was a few disclaimers I'm making there, but he had the best example I know of. A little joke he told each time he talked. So this young man riding down the road, his little pickup truck, and had a load of penguins. And the policeman pulled him over and said, what's the matter with you, boy? What are you doing hauling penguins around? He said, you better take them things to the zoo. And he said, yes, sir. Left. Next day he came riding down the road, same load of penguin that they had on sunglasses. And the policeman stopped him and said, what in the world are you doing? I told you yesterday to take your penguin to the zoo. He said, I did. He said, what are you doing? He said, we're going to the beach today. So the moral of that deal is, what I say up there and what you hear may be two different things. That's the best this frame runs without. Yeah. And I've also been blessed, like I told you, long-term sobriety. And there's a lot of lines in this book that describes me and other alcoholics. And I always ask my first sponsor, I said, what are the definitions? He said, the descriptions, you know. And so I wrestled all that, and I stand up here tonight with that much sobriety, been blessed. And in the last year or two, it's changed. And I picked out these two paragraphs, and it applies to me. If you will, and don't hear as much I say tonight, try to listen to this. If you're wondering how this thing's going to turn out in life, if you'll do the deal. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing. But am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, bored, and glum, like some self-righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute?
Yes,
there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. Your most satisfactory years of existence lie ahead. Thus we will find you in the fellowship. And so will you. Let's hop into this book. Okay? I couldn't put it in no better words. But I'm going to stumble through this thing for about an hour, hour and a half. See, try to get y'all warmed up for dinner for tomorrow night. And I better go to getting drunk. But before I get drunk, I'm going to tell you about my childhood a little bit. My coach is here with me tonight, named Jeanette. My wife, Alanon, she said, don't stay in that drunk log too long. I said, okay, you just give me a second. Something worked out for me, she can take over and do this. I was born in a proving ground for alcoholism, I believe. My daddy drank too much liquor. My mom was a good Christian Southern Baptist woman. Only thing, I was born on the wrong side of the tracks. I was the youngest of seven kids. Four of us either hospitalized or died from the disease alcoholism. One died at a young age and never knew. And the oldest one of this bunch never drank that I know of. But he needed a drink bad. If you know what I mean. But prior to that first drink, and I was a late starter, I didn't start like 12. I was irritable, restless, and discontent that it talks about in the doctor's opinion. I was scared by riots, I was chicken. I don't know what made me that way. And when you get to the inventory steps and it talks about the fear, that just highlighted everything for me, for this drunk. A lot of other things wrong with me, a lot of other things that describes him himself. But fear was the number one for this drunk. At 12 years old, I had a spiritual awakening at the First Baptist Church in Ackworth, Georgia. Something was different. They called it being saved in the Baptist Church. And I believe that happened to me. Now, I forgot to put that disclaimer out. I'm going to talk about God some tonight. If God runs you out here, I hope liquor runs your ass back. Sorry, I could have left that ass off. I'll get up a minute for that. Something happened to me then, and I felt good. but it was short term. I felt good, a little relief from that fear, and I don't know what exactly how to describe it. I was too young. But it was a short period of time. A lot of stuff happened to me when I was 12 years old. I didn't know nothing about being selfish and all that, and I was 9 years behind my next brother older than me, so I was a baby, and my dad got sick when I was in the third grade. I'm not up here to give you a hard luck story that, I'm going to knock that book off of that. I had plenty to eat, plenty to wear to school, you know, but money got tight. Daddy started out and sell a place off and all that. And what I'm going to describe here the best I can, we have different character defects. One of my old sponsors used to call it. He is country 1, 2, 3, but he can get to me. Character. ELM was his name, bless his heart. Anyway, one of my main character defects besides fear was big shot eyes. I don't know where that comes from, just alcoholic, I guess. I don't know how much we can blame on alcoholics, but when I was in the third grade, I started wanting to run with the kids that were born across town and all that. And by the time I was in fifth grade, I think it was 12 years old, thereabout. There's some people in this room tonight that locally were raised around Axe, well, they're not quite old to me, but they remember. Wanted to go skating, you had to go to Marietta. And it was 90 cents to rent your skates and skate. And I went to my mother. I said, I need a dollar. And I knew things were tight. You know, I mean, I was just a kid. But I'll never forget this, and I'll carry it to my grave. I kept on, my mother, and she was trying to tell me, I wouldn't listen. You know why? The selfishness, the other part of it, kicked in, because it's all about me. I knew money was tight. I kept on, I made her cry. She said, son, there's not a dollar on the hill. But me. Yeah. It's all about me. I kept on. That woman started crying. Something kicked in. I started crying. I swore to myself that day. I said, this never happened again. I'm going to work. I went to work, shining shoe, barbershop. And I got a job at the grocery store and all that. But, I wanted to wear Levi's, not Allen's 5 and 10 cent store jeans. And Levi's at that time was $4 a pair. I got me a charge account at Eaton Department Store, and I paid $1 a week. And I wore clothes like them boys across town. Didn't really change that. But during this time, at 12 years old, my best friend had just lost his wife in this disease. That's a lot of liquor. His sister got us some beer. And that's my second spiritual awakening of spirit. Somebody old enough to remember Carlin Black Label. That awful tasty stuff you ever put in your mouth, and a real good laxative in case you ever It was terrible. It was terrible. But when I put that stuff down, something happened. That book right there talks about it. That don't happen to the average bear, for lack of better words, okay? It was magic. Prior to putting that alcohol in my system, I told you how full of fear I was. I was too short. I was too fat. I had buck teeth. And I was scared of Jim Smith down the street. Two Carlin Black Labels fixed that. That don't happen to everybody. I know it said we drank for the effect. Yeah, I got the effect. Let's go with it. I wasn't scared of Jim Smith. I wasn't too fat. The whole nine yards. I can't help but think about my friend's older sister, got us that beer. She died at 41. Cirrhosis of the liver in Bradenton, in Florida. On the beach. The Ackworth Beach was popular back there in that day, and she put on a two-piece bathing suit and turned heads from everywhere. But alcohol got her. 41 years old. I didn't say it myself, John. I ain't gonna carry through the whole teenage. They are 17 years old. We'd already experimented, drinking beer, going up on the lake, doing what you do. 17 years old, that same lady bought us a fifth of Seagram 7, Dobbins Air Force Base. His parents were out of town. We invited a date over to his house. I started drinking, and I never thought a whole lot about it. I seen my brother dying from a disease. My sister had got that fifth lick, and I started just drinking. Johnny said, "You better slow down." I said, "I'm all right. I got it. You got it all right." 17-year-old kid, and I drank that fifth liquor in a short period of time. I got sick. Next thing I knew, I begged him to take me to the hospital, get my stomach pumped out. Well, he took me downstairs and set me in a rocking chair outside, rocked me, and it come out. I didn't have to worry about that, you know. But that's the first time, the bell went off. Maybe I better cut back. I better change. I better do something. And so I set out for there 6 months, a year. I can't drink none of the beer. Liquor makes me crazy, makes me do crazy. It just, you know. Anyway, long story with that. at my senior year in high school, just didn't make it to the senior year. I quit high school. I then broke my mama's heart one time. I was the youngest of seven, as I told you. I was the only one that didn't make it through high school. All about me. I want to get out there and get in the world, make money, do what Jerry wants to do. No consideration. I don't know about that grandiose plan that I was telling you about and Big Shot Iris. I don't know where y'all ever had any big dreams or not, but boy, I did. Still do it once in a while. She'll calm me down. I said, I'm going to get me a good job. I'm going to move to Atlanta out of Ackworth, get me an apartment, have a bar in it, have all the pretty ladies in Atlanta. You know, Atlanta is full of pretty girls, you know. There's pretty girls in Ackworth, but, you know, grandiose plan, though. And I tell you, it was a good plan. Other than you can't haul chicken feed, and there's nothing wrong with hauling chicken feed in a tanker truck, but if the salary won't take you to Atlanta. That was short-lived. I said, I messed up big time. Along with a little girl breaking my heart, and that just put a salt on the wound. I said, I'll show them I'll go in the Army. Turned 18, I went down and volunteered for the draft. Next thing I knew, I was Fort Jackson, South Carolina. What in the world have I done here? basic train up there, and what have I done? Little did I know, that was one of the best things I've ever done. I stumbled around there and got me a GED, and got through the military, wound up Fort Benning, Georgia, about a year there. And the only thing I learned how to do in high school was type. And I was pretty good at math. So I got me a job in operation room, clerk, type. Well, I was supposed to be a demolition expert. Went and had 8 weeks training for Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And the company commander liked me. And the first sergeant, he drank the way I wanted to drink. And he smoked them non-filter Chesterfield cigarettes and had that cigarette call being my hero. Now, what kind of stuff is that? Anyway, started coming down with orders to go to Vietnam. Demolition expert. And our company there, we trained for officers and all that for demolition. That old fear, I couldn't drink enough of that 3.2 beer to get to right then. Subsided. That fear kicked in again. And finally, the company commander came one day and said, "There's two of you left, and you got to go. 10B-20 MOS. Going to Fort Devens, Massachusetts. 20th Engineers, and going to Vietnam." my daddy was one of them. He didn't say I'm sorry, and he didn't say I love you. He sure wasn't gonna cry over nobody. I come home a couple weeks before. Well, they'd already seen my old, I had an older brother in World War II when I was born. He was 20 years old. And so they knew the story. I said, I'm going to TDY. And he said, no, I know what's going on. He came in and talked to me. Only time I ever seen him shed a tear. He said, come back, boy. It's all right. I left. He said, I love you. Went to Fort Devon, Massachusetts. Showed up there. That was in September 1965. I was due out in January. And if they'd have left the week that I got up there, I'd have went. Captain Commander called me in and he said, what in the world are they doing sending you up here? We're going to train 3 months and you're going to be too short time. Sir, I ain't lost nothing in Vietnam. If you got any other out for me, I'll take it. Or I'll stay and I'll go. He don't want to put you in a holding cup. So I stayed up there and partied from September to went to New York. Four of us met in there. New York. I never had been out of Ackworth a whole lot. Maybe to Florida once or twice, you know. Here I am, 19 years old. 20. Got to New York, Forrest met, Port Authority, we're drunk. They said, you're going to take you out to, they said they had family bar. I didn't know about no family bar. That's what the Yankees done up there, you know what I mean? went to the Bronx and got real drunk. And this is where I look back, doing inventory. This is where I look back. I think that where God started doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I got drunk, passed out in a taxi cab to bring me back from the Bronx to Times Square. And Times Square was pretty rough back then, I'm telling you. You get whatever you want. Anyway, of all things, I pass out, and a cab driver wakes me up. I don't know where you're from, what you're doing, other than your GI, what little money you got, send you shoot. But you better get your buddy in there and stay in and out. He's absolutely right. There's been a lot of cab drivers I could have drawn up there that wasn't that. But that's just where I look back, and we all go through scrap, etc. All right. Lucky enough to get through the military and come back to Ackworth, Jordan. I got it now. 2 year military behind me, got a GED. I'm headed to Atlanta. I show their asses now. I got it. I go to Atlanta, get me an apartment, bar in it. Boomershine Pontiac was on Spring Street, if any of you old enough remember that. I'm going to get me a black GTO that I seen on the shoulder up down there. Forward and forward, 3-2. Well, went to work at Ford Motor Company. Started dating my son's mother. And we decided it'd be best if we got married. And I didn't go to Atlanta. I'm sorry. Anyway, I was lucky enough, wound up going to work for the railroad. 2 years later, and myself and my brother started a business, and I was working at night on the railroad and in that business in daytime, and I become a workaholic along with it. I worked all the time, and I was going to make it, because I wanted the stuff, and I wasn't going to be like older brother, the other people I seen, get a divorce, and, you know, I'm going to be a good daddy. I'm going to do all the things that a man's supposed to do. The only thing that slowed it down, that the drinking started progressing. And let me put this out here before I forget it. See, y'all listen, old man, I was getting high at this stuff and that. I don't know. Blame it on God. I asked him to help me. My drinking went in three stages. You've heard this before. This is never different way of saying it. I drank because I wanted to, I drank because I needed to, and I drank because I had to. That summed up my alcoholism. But going through it, working all the time, trying to coach that boy, made it football, had some good time with it. But it got to the point where it was increasing. And we all tried the cutting back methods and I'm gonna go ahead and cut the chase on this thing. I got to the 1982. I knew he was gonna be going to college here in a little while, and had a house, swimming pool, new car. Owed a lot of money, but we had it. I said, I'll go on the road, on main line, we call it. I make more money. I just traveled from Atlanta to Chattanooga and Cleveland, Tennessee. That's when my alcoholism really, really exploded. The last 3 years. I packed a quart of liquor in my suitcase after every trip before I packed my clean clothes for the next car. And it just progressed and progressed and progressed. Everything was falling apart. And I thought when I first got out there, I said, I died and went to heaven. Let me get that hotel room. I got a quart of liquor in the bag and drank. All I got to do is answer that phone. It rings. Would it be 8 hours or 24 hours? We didn't know how long we'd be on the layover. In the first few months, I said, this is pretty good. But now, alcoholism took me to places I didn't want to go. And it called me to do things I didn't want to do. Alcoholics Anonymous, it took me to places I never dreamed to go. It called me to do things I never dreamed I could do. But during that 3 years, it took me the awfulest hell in my mind that I've ever been to. When you have to drink, you're trying to maneuver. I never was going to drink on the job, right? Keep drinking. I started drinking on the job. I couldn't make a trip. Couldn't make a trip. I never was going to run around with my wife. Keep drinking. Got in doubt. Started doing stuff unbecoming to a married man. I'm going to leave that there. Instead of telling a gentleman, well, y'all don't know all the crap I've done or nobody else in here. I wasn't doing right. Took me to places I didn't want to go. Got to seeing in Cleveland, Tennessee, had this old preacher. He hung around a depot running the railroad bus. I hated to see him when he was there. You know, I hated to go by signs where the church had said people that pray together stay together. I just turned my head. I don't see that shit. That old preacher, I'd see him, you know. We'd get off the locomotive and then ready to go to bed, get a drink mainly, but how much horsepower that locomotive got? I don't know, and I don't care, preacher. I'd be rude to him. I could be. She'd still hang around. You know, insane thinking. Just, I didn't have to get on a guilt trip because the preacher was there. I could just walk by and smoke by. You know how we get paranoid. Crazy. I call it crazy. Anyway, Rena told you that. If bad stuff, it's wonder I didn't lose my job. They called me, the guy called me in Chattanooga one night, and he said, JL got you going back south on the Mona Island. I said, hey, he's on that train. I've been called. And he said, who called you? He done all the calls. I called him myself on the train. It's not good business. And you get out there, and the engineer may string a line of some of that other stuff across the console. I was scared to ride with it. You know, I had an antidote for that. I just reached down that bag and get that look. Get them back, Charlie. Let's go. Wonder if we didn't get killed. when this stuff started closing in on me. November 3rd, 1985, went to Cleveland, Tennessee, same depot I was talking about, and I had an old car up there, and we kept extra liquor in the car in case we'd run out. And a lot of time we'd go, and I'd never turn the sheets back. Have a layover, never turn the sheets back. Would be 8 hours sometimes when it get run. Well, they called us back faster than I miscalculated. I never had turned the sheet back. Called back. Got in good enough shape to get the depot and had a conductor at that time. We had to boost it on the train and he'd looked out for me before. And I said, Bobby, how about let me ride the boost stage, you ride the head in. He said, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it. He said, I got one drunken fool around up here in Chattanooga and the other at home. I can't, y'all are running me crazy. He said, get up there and do your job. He never talked to me that way before, and I didn't appreciate it. I got up on that locomotive, set my suitcase down. I went back, and I kept watching that old preacher on this Sunday. He wasn't going to be there. He's probably worried doing his job. I said, I don't know why it's parents. So there's a couple important prayers I said in my life. But I remember setting that suitcase down. We had three locomotives on that particular train. Set my suitcase down and wobbled back around to the third locomotive. And I got on my knees and I said, if there's a God up there, please help me. I can't take no more. I said, I don't care if we hit a gasoline truck on the next cross. I don't care if we turn it over. I was to the jumping off point that the book talks about. I wish I could tell you that my last drink. It wasn't. I had a drink in that suitcase. I had to have a drink coming back south. Took a drink. That was on Sunday. On a Monday, son and mother was in the hospital. She'd make several trips to the hospital. This is a family disease. If anybody's ever got any questions about it, just look around. Okay? It's a family disease, no doubt. And I affected that woman, my alcoholism affected that woman's health, and she had other issues too. And it was, anyway, she had made several hospital stops, and she was over at Thornton Road. In the hospital, I went over on a Monday. I was drinking when I got there, drank on the way back. Come to my brother's house that night. Monday night football on. I called a book in Atlanta, made a large bet that I wasn't able to cover. I had no business betting that much. Lost the bet. He took care of me. Later, that's Monday night. Tuesday morning, I'd already warned them all over at the hospital. I said, I'm going to go over and tell that doctor what all was wrong with her. In the morning. I'm going to get over there. I got up that morning, and I was late. And I usually wasn't late for nothing. I was late for what I was supposed to have been over there. I started trying to shave. That shaking, I went to my liquor cabinet. Wasn't no blended whiskey. I drank blended whiskey. Wasn't nothing left in there but gin, and she would drink a little gin. Well, at that time, she didn't drink all. Anyway, I'm here to report to you. If you drink anything white, such as white lightning, gin, which I didn't like, vodka, when you put that stuff down, if it don't take hold, you're in trouble. You're in serious trouble. And that wasn't the first time it happened. A year prior to this, I got on an old crying drunk down in Sarasota, Florida. Ain't nothing I hate worse than old crying drunk. You know, I have to dealt with this slobber all over you, carry on. Sarasota, Florida, whatever. That was a year before this. I said, I can't quit drinking. I cannot not drink. A year later, that morning when I started shave, when I got that gin, that would happen. You talking about? I was to the jumping off point. That's all you can describe it. The book talks about some people have a spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. Take what part of this you want and leave the rest, but don't leave too much in here. I've heard people make that statement and people get to leaving shit and then the next thing they get drunk and die. I don't want to hear that. But take whatever you want, leave the rest of this. When I was 22 years old, a brother died of this disease at the Veterans Hospital in Atlanta. I gave blood to him the day before he died. I swore that day, I'll never take another drink. Y'all heard that stuff before, too. I ain't going to drink like my mother. I ain't going to drink like my when nothing wouldn't happen, and I looked in the mirror, I seen Charles' face, just like I'm looking. Boy, if you don't do something, you're going to die. I was lucky enough to work with a company that had good insurance. Went in there, called the railroad and said, look, I got to have some help. Lucky enough to go to Charter Beaufort Hospital in Atlanta. And there, back at that time, it was $18,000. I remember it for that big book or one like it, and but there's one of the biggest things that ever happened to me in my sobriety. You gotta find your own, I ain't gonna say own niche, we all gotta work the problem, that's not the right word I'm looking for, but the thing that's gonna settle with you or take with you that may not take one, Dean back there. That little old lady in there named Liv. She didn't weigh 100 pounds, soaking wet. She fell, broke her back in the bathtub, and like died from the disease. Okay, she was my counselor. We also had a volunteer that come out and read to us out of the big book. I forgot now where it's 3 nights a week, or whatever it was. And just go, yeah, I hear that, yeah. Hell, I got pretty good in the group. I'm Jerry, I'm alcohol. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Seventh pilot. Delta pilot. I like to think about it. His name was Ron. How would I remember that 36 years later if he wasn't a real alcoholic, crazy like me? He come in there with his wingtip shoes on, marching around, and I tell you this story got as funny as hell to me. Oh, sorry. Okay. Picked up Damon's phone. Liv kept telling, you know, Ron wouldn't say he's an alcoholic. I'd already learned, and most everybody else in the group learned to do it. To get out of this place. Do what the woman said. Ron, I'm Ron. My daddy flew airplanes, drunk, da da da. Liv, I was watching Ron, too. Some be bopping there, wingtip shoes. Come in one day and start that stuff with Liv. Liv said, all right, Ron. He said, I understand you tried to back the plane out with a flat tire. Probably not an alcoholic and all that, but said, I'll tell you one thing. Until you become one, you ain't going to ever get out of this place. Hey, come around the next day with introducing ourselves. No, Ron said, I'm Ron, I'm alcoholic. But all that being said, I started comparing. I don't know if y'all ever done this, you know. I didn't drink like Charles. He was drinking white lightning, wine, and tide. Even though when I checked in, I stayed in the detox and they told me if my blood pressure didn't come down, it's gonna carry me to the hospital. I wasn't in no rosy shape when I got there. But anyhow, got dry enough, started trying to put the BS on Liv, and you know how she could read through that 2 seconds. So, I don't know what happened. One day I got up my nerve. I said, Liv, I'm going to talk to you in this group. Okay, dear. I said, little bitty woman, come on. I got up against the wall or something. I never, soon started, didn't scare me that bad. I was scared to death. I said, but I want to ask you something, Liv. I said, what makes an alcoholic? Matter of fact, she said, I don't forget his name, come out and said, "You haven't been listening to the man reading to you out of the book and getting a description of it?" I said, "Yeah, but it ain't taken." "What is your definition?" "I don't know. I already got a little bit of respect, but I knew she knew what she was." See, that's the real deal. One alcoholic will end up. Nothing like it. Anyhow, I said, "Come on, Liv, what you got?" She said, "Try this on, Jerry." She said, "It don't matter what you drank, where you at when you drank it, how much you drank, but it's what it does to you when you drink. Your ass is in the hospital from drinking too much." You may have a point. She planted a seed. Now, would that help anybody or not? But it helped me a lot of time when I was trying to get through this time where I was still looking for another way out. Still didn't want to be an alcoholic when I landed in Carville, Georgia. And a crazy man met me over here at the... By the way, y'all know you're the craziest people in the world, don't you? Huh? Okay. You know why I say that? One guy back here say, "I'm getting a divorce next week." Everybody just laughed. In other words, young lady said, "I lost my job." They just laughed. And then what really topped it off, somebody back in the back say, "I want what y'all got." Crazy. Anyway, I met this guy named George. They called him the treatment center. Over in the Kroger, right over here. He had a little red Toyota truck. He said, "You Jerry?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Follow me." He took all this. I was still scared, you know, I was driving drunk, so I wasn't speeding around here and all that stuff. And I said, "What's the matter with it?" We get over to the Sure Club where some of you are going to eat lunch tomorrow. And if you take a look when you go in that place, if you go in the side door there, he stopped me right there. He said, "Okay, Jerry, I want to explain something to you. If you want to save your soul," said, "you see all them churches, staples right there, steeples, sell them." I said, "Yes, sir." I suggest you go over there. "If you want to save your ass from alcoholism, I suggest you go in here, sit down, shut up, and listen." That's hard for a drunk like me. I don't know. I like to talk. He said, "Listen, and you may have a shot at this thing." I tried to do what he said, and Harris roofed them with 10 or 12 people. And I walked in that place, and I'd already seen some of it. They took us to one meeting out on the street. And I'd seen one of them. But I got in there, and I got to look. Signed all around the room. Easy does it. Let go. Let God. One day at a time. And they had one with a monkey in there, and upside down, it said, "Think, think, think." So I got to Jordan. I said, "What's all that?" He said, "That don't apply to you. You don't do no fun." I'll thank for you. Anyway, he helped me very much. I was scared. I mean, he was, we got sober in Cleveland, Ohio. What he told me was, he come up with some crazy stuff every once in a while. He said, "Jerry, first and foremost, you've got to get honest about your drinking. If you don't do that, you can't, there ain't no hope for you." And he didn't go into the psychic change that we have to have. He talked about it in the book. He put it out there in layman's terms where I can understand it. He said, "You got to get honest about your drinking." He said, "Two people on earth you better be honest with." He said, "Number one is me. Only to himself." He said, "Number two, you're a lawyer." I said, "Lawyer? What are you talking about?" He said, "You'll see." 5 years later, I was going through the divorce, and I started BSing the lawyer. And the lawyer said, "You better get honest with me." I said, "Maybe he knew what he was talking about." How they know so much? How one drunk knows so much, you know, when you get in? Somebody had a year, I thought they had got it. But I was lucky enough to hook up with a bunch of good people, and a lot of people in the room know one of the co-founders of this roundup. He was my service sponsor. he encouraged me to go to get into service work. And I was involved with it for 8 years. Now, service work is not for everybody, y'all. Just the ones that want to stay sober. You've heard it before, and I've heard it. And the ones that want to be happy, joyous, and free. I come in after I learn what the deal is. I want the whole deal. I got all I can get out of drinking. I want all I can get out of y'all. In the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been blessed. I've been blessed to get a lot. 8 months rolled around, and that service sponsor I'm talking about, one of the co-founders of this roundup, he said, you're the guy going to Macon. And da-da-da-da-da. And I went to my first roundup. I got sober in November of 85. The next roundup was in August of 86. I went, told somebody about this prior to the meeting. One of the main reasons that I'm so involved with this roundup, I've told it 1,000 times, Tom Iverson, behind the podium. And I hope I never forget to do this, I'm asked to share behind the podium. And what he said was that night, there's somebody in this room tonight wondering where this thing's going to work for them or not. I might well have held up my hand. Had 8 months, I'd go on through the most. I still didn't know. And he had a horrendous story. Any of you ever heard him? You know, he killed a couple of people, went to prison. And I thought to myself, I'm going to listen to him. If he's staying sober, what he went through, maybe I got a shot. Maybe. And he said, I do some of the basics is how I stay sober. Okay, what do you got? He said, I get up in the morning, I ask this God that I don't understand to help me make it through the day without a drink. I don't drink no liquor. I go to the meeting at night and I thank this God that I don't understand. I hope I never forget that. I hope there's somebody in this room tonight wondering where this thing is going to work for them or not, that can hear that message because it comes from Tom, not from me. Well, Eddie Rabbit sitting back there on the back seat, he reminded me to tell about that George, that first sponsor. You know, I'd been sober, I don't know, a couple of years, learned how to talk the talk, and I was okay. We had a speaker meeting every Wednesday night over at Sure Club. He got, he didn't get speakers all around. Old Calvin, old guy, he gone big meat. Come to me one day, he said, Jerry, said, no, that was in my first year. Well, he says, need somebody to talk tonight. Well, I knew Jordan wasn't going to talk right that, but he told me no talking for a year, you know. you know, speaking, especially. Old Brock said, Jerry, I got to have somebody. I said, come on, man, do me a favor. Now, you can get my ass eat out. I'm going to ask him. I know what the answer is going to be. I said, George, Calvin wants me to talk with him tonight. He didn't flinch. He said, talk about what? He said, you don't know nothing. You ain't got nothing to talk about. He didn't understand either. I was very sensitive, didn't suffer well. Anyway, like I told you, I got into service work, started meeting people like Butch over here. We wouldn't normally mix some 35 years ago. I think he's been there around it like me, I'm not sure. Where else? Where else is it happening? And then life started setting in. 5 years of sobriety, myself, Richie's mama, we didn't make it. As close as I come to getting drunk, y'all. And it was pounded in my head at some point in time, they ain't nothing going to stand between you and the drink, but your higher power. At 2 a.m. on a Thursday morning, I got up and put on my jeans, was going to work that morning, but I knew where I could get a drink. The pain had got so strong. And Heal was my sponsor by that time, and he's one and told me, Jerry, think it through. Ain't nothing gonna stand between you. I got on my knees and I said the same prayer that I said in Cleveland, Tennessee, 5 years prior. God help me. I didn't sleep no more that night, but I didn't drink none. I got up and I went to work. And I told that going through a divorce was terrible. Everybody's been there and knows this. It's terrible. Well, I threw myself into AA too, and I stayed active. Started going around. I started going to, and y'all looking at a drunk. It's another line from Tom. The bus don't normally run this route. I've been blessed to play golf at Pebble Beach, play golf at East Lake in Atlanta, play golf in Scotland, play golf in Ireland. All the good stuff that's happened to me there is a direct or indirect result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Hey, little lady in this room tonight gave me a nice compliment yesterday. She said, y'all got a good family ahead. She knows my son. I said, you know why? Alcoholics Anonymous. Got a grandson. It's never seen me or his daddy take a drink. He come over and had dinner Monday night with just himself and just, yeah. Thought that was going to say goodbye. He's going to college in Kentucky. He said, now I'm going to come back by Wednesday before we leave. We thought he was gone. And Ned just cried a little bit. And I said, now don't start. Don't start. Well, he come back by Wednesday. Tell us goodbye. I thought about my daddy. I told him, I said, Brody, I love you. I'm going to pray for you, son. Every day I saw it happen. Where I come from, grown men don't cry and they don't say I love you. Get in our calls now and see what happens. Come on in. Yeah. Stay a while. Come on in. Get your feet wet. Yeah. Come on in. He been gone 2 days, not even 2 days yet. Had everybody on the phone. It's crazy. Love is different. Love is different. Divorced 6 years. Went to a class reunion. 4 year deal or 5 year, whatever it was. That awkward beach, I saw me. Met Jeanette. I knew her before in high school. Just that now. Anyway, our friends were trying to hook us up, you know, and said, y'all be a good man. I said, mm-hmm. Fourth thing I liked about her, she had big blue eyes and some big other thing. I ain't gonna call that. I'll be in trouble for that one. We started dating. And, you know, I knew about falling in love, and I didn't well. Started dating, she lived in Marietta, and, she lived in a townhouse. Marietta went down to pick her up one night, 3 or 4 months into the, she come walking down the steps there with a white outfit on. I looked. That feeling. Something ain't right. Something ain't right. Here I was 50 years old and didn't know what love was. I fell in love with that woman. And we've had 25 years. And to put this out here, when I was talking about his family disease, now she had two other alcoholic husbands prior to me. Thank God for Al-Anon. What I asked her was, That's exactly what it is you like about alcoholics. You don't care whether they're drunk or sober. You just want an alcoholic, right? I said, why? She said, I don't know.
I suggest you go to Allah.
She knew my record. She knew our friend. We've been married 25 years, and thank God for the program. And this took us to places, to four international conventions, one Al-Anon convention in Vancouver. Alcoholics Anonymous took me to a place I never dreamed of, and we get to do it together. Okay? Al-Anon had their convention, state convention up here last weekend. We went. This week. Family disease, y'all. And some people have different beliefs. I believe it's hereditary. And you know, people say, you know, my daddy didn't make me alcoholic. I'm not saying he made me no alcoholic. I said it's in the gene. I believe that with all my heart. And this grandboy I'm talking about, 18 years old, he's got it on both sides of his family. And I hope and pray he never takes it right. His dad's done a good job trying to explain it to him. You know, and we'll see. But that's another reason I said it for him. Here he is with 26 years sobriety, thank God. When I got in here, I hope Alcoholics Anonymous stays live and well, and I will not. Because we don't know what the future holds. Hope and pray you don't have to go through some of the stuff we went through. I don't know what all I'm trying to put together here, other than some of the highlights that this roundup, I've met some of the most amazing people in the world. Not just here, other roundup speakers, and I told you about them. Just, it's not just a speaker or somebody on the committee. Get old Joe over here and listen to his story. I told you about riding a feed truck, made a friend in Huntsville, Alabama. You know what he done? Raised chickens. We sat in there in the hospitality room for an hour. He told me about his story. I said, hell, I know about hauling that chicken feed. But I wish I could describe how blessed I've been to try to work with other alcoholics. I got to go to the hospital for 25 years and do it through. That's not brag. That's just fact. And there's one in this room tonight. And I can honestly say, out of all them years, I cannot prove that five of them are sober. But I went every Wednesday. You know what happened? I got to stay sober. Don't need no pats on the back. Get active. This thing will give you back. It's like everything else. You're going to get out of it what you put into it. These people are working here this weekend. They're going to feel good when they leave. I promise you. I've done it too many times. let me tell you one other little... Damon, I'm going to pick your phone up here before it's over with. That one, he got it up here. Talked about Jeanette. 2013, we went to the Al-Anon International Convention in Vancouver. They called me, want me to be a chairperson. But I... AA speaker there, won a pretty plate where it went. And I'm very sensitive on something. Well, finally they called me to speak. I didn't want to be no damn chairperson. I had to keep crying on my ego. I told you I had to ask God to take the ego out. I went on and done it. Boy, I put the clock on. If them speakers get long-winded like me, I'd sit down. Where I'm heading with this. Some of you might have been there. You might have been at the convention center overlooking the water there in Vancouver. They seen these seaplanes coming in, cruise ships over here, and it's just one of the most beautiful sights I've ever seen in my life. We was on a high when we come back. I really enjoyed it. They had good speakers. Man in this room, his wife was there. Life was going so good. It's 2013. Get back, Jeanette wasn't feeling good. went to the doctor. Long story short on that, she had third stage lymphoma. Wound up in the hospital, and friends come down. It wasn't a pretty sight, you know, cancer never is. And I started asking the questions, you know, we very come. Why? We're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to be active in AA, out and on. It was so good. What? Anyway, she wound up in the cancer center treatment, and it wasn't good. And the grandson was small at the time. And people put people in my life for a reason. I don't know why. I was somebody talking about, excuse me, I heard in the lobby today, you know, God just makes things happen. Hello, nurse in that unit. There wasn't nobody supposed to go in there. No kids especially. They had to wear protective stuff. And so finally this little nurse, I went over to her and I said, look, I got a little grandson. And my wife was afraid. I said, anyway, we bring him. You know the rule, Mr. Beard. I know the rule. I just come to ask you. She said, bring that little germ carrier down. We're going to wrap him up. So she brought it down and wrapped him up. Where I'm headed this, she said, during all this time, she said, God, if you would let me live to see Brody grow up, I'll be happy. He just turned 18. I went over to appear. Prayer worked. But during this deal now, her sister come up, and this was Wellstar Hospital. And they opened up a nice restaurant in the hospital there, and I went there and ate some. Anyway, you don't know when you just say hello to somebody there. You don't know when it's going to come back to you. You don't know. You know. I remember the horse of dices, too. If they don't, sorry. Don't help them often, but anyway, her sister come down one night. We went down that restaurant and ate. And this little gal, when I walked in, I'm gonna call her Carol, because I don't even know her name today. Well, hey Jerry, how you doing? Hey baby, I remembered her face. I didn't know her name. She was working there. I just got a little warm, fuzzy feeling, you know, just see another girl. Maybe she's drunk. Didn't think more about it. We went and ate, and this told her about all they had in that restaurant and all that. The next morning, she said, would you go down and get me one of those banana muffins they had? I said, sure will. Walked back down to that same restaurant. She heard her sister talking about it. This is just one example of things that happened to you in AA. But I walked back in, that same gal, within that morning, they lined up out the door in the pastry line, all that. Hey, Jerry, how you doing? I said, good morning, baby. She said, come around here. I said, no, you ain't going to get me whooped. I ain't going around. People stand up. Come around here, Jerry. I went around. She said, what do you need? I said, I got one of them muffins over there. Okay. She went and got it, and people were looking like, who in the hell is this? We got the muffins. And she said, I started walking over with it. She said, hey, Jerry, you want me to butter this muffin? Butter it up, baby. Hey. I get the muff, come out of that place, start walking down the hall. I went to crying like a baby. Where else could I call it? Not even know the girl's name. 5 years later or more, she walks in my home group. Two times she walked in, she's gone again. We don't know. But things will happen to you if you stay sober, despite all we can do. I'm going to tell one more story, and then I'm going to shut down. I've been blessed because I've sponsored a lot of people and passed on what passed on to me. Early on, I told you about that brother of mine, and my sister wet her brain. I don't know if you, some of you seen a wet brain, some of you haven't. She wound up dying in a home right up here, not half a mile from me. Morningside Drive, she was no longer. Softest cancer. She drank liquor. She mixed wine and vodka, and put her in the hospital. She threw it up, and I keep thinking, you know, why me? Why did I get? And every once in a while, you know what happened? I think about a drink. You know what I'd do? I'd pull in up there. And she did not know that she wanted to drink. And this was a beautiful woman, jet black hair, black teeth, had it all at one time, drank it all up. I pull in up here and I asked her, I say, Hen, having her nickname. I say, Hen, you ever think about a drink? Nope. I say, you got a cigarette? Yeah, I'd get her some, I'd go buy her some cigarettes. I told you about giving blood to my brother, my family full of it. But one more story that stands out in my mind, I'm going to shut up. His name was Jimmy. Jimmy reminded me so much of my brother that died of this disease. It was beans drinking. My brother, he'd go 6 months and I'd drink. But when he did drink, it was all over. Hospital, jail, you know. Well, I was dating from him. Anyway, this guy named Jimmy, myself and the guy I sponsored, took him to Rome one time. I knew Jim had been in the, a lot of time, detox a lot of time. I got over there. Old Paul, he's a good friend of mine, I suppose. Started over with Jimmy, one of them old crying drunks I tell you about, you know. Paul was petting him. And he asked me, I said, tell him to shut up, please. Anyway, we checked Jimmy in over there, and I said, Paul, you think you know so much? I'm going to find out. I don't believe Jimmy's been over here all this much. My friend asked him at the desk, I said, how many times have you been over here, Dita? 22. Paul said, it looked like somebody let the air out of me because I thought I'd done something great taking him over, you know. I already knew that old sponsor of mine told me, you know, he said, if you ever help anybody, I hope he moves to California and you don't find out about it. We don't need that. But sitting at home one Saturday afternoon, I'm not telling you I was thinking about a drink, but it wasn't too far in his dearness divorce time, and I wasn't in no good space. Phone rang to Jimmy. I didn't know it was Jimmy. Didn't even sound like Jimmy. You know who this is, Jimmy? No, who is that? Who am I talking? This is Jimmy. Jimmy. Jimmy who? Told me. He said, Jay, don't you come to my birthday tomorrow? I said, what kind of birthday? I got 1 year. I said, I don't believe it, Jim. You ain't been sober over here. I ain't seen you around here nowhere. Where you been, Jim? Yeah, I have, Jerry. I said, why don't you come to my birthday? But I'll be there. Went to see Jimmy get his 1 year chip. The next year, just about the same month, I went to Jimmy's funeral. Jimmy made 1 year. We don't know. But you know what? I plan to see Jimmy help me. When you plan to, you don't know when it's coming back. Or you don't know how. But it's coming back. I hope you got something out of it. And then one of the co-founders of this deal that I talked about, this is how he closed his talk. And I don't know nothing no better. And I appreciate y'all letting me be here. If nobody told you they loved you today, let me be the first. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely of what you time and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks.